Hi, this is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. And on this episode of Wandering DMs, we are going to talk again about online gaming resources for logistics and for video streaming and for virtual tabletops. And we actually are doing this for the second time. So we did this yesterday, and we did have some audio glitches that we felt were unacceptable. And boy, Paul and I both think that this is such an important topic at this time. Of we are undergoing, you know, a major global medical emergency at the moment, and all of our lives have been disrupted here in March 2020, and all of our, you know, society is really radically different than it was a couple weeks ago. And so many of us are stuck or possibly quarantined in our houses. And for many of us, the only way we have to actually keep contact with our friends and our acquaintances is through the internet. Either video chat or hopefully video gaming will allow us to maintain our connections and for some of us maintain our sanity at this time, actually. So to whatever degree Paul and I know about how to make online gaming and online, you know, shows work, we did want to share it and have the opportunity for a discussion about how we can maintain that part of our lives at a time when it's more important than ever.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, some of you may notice while Dan was talking there, I'm sitting here futzing around with audio stuff. I just want to make 100% sure that the show is going out correctly and everyone can hear us okay. We are watching the chat, and we will happily incorporate your chat into the show. So if you have questions or comments or whatnot, or if you want to tell us that we've screwed it up again and that the audio is terrible, please do let us know. But we do think this is actually a really important topic, so we agreed we should come back on and do a makeup session. So yeah. Here we are.
Yeah, totally. And so we are taping this a Monday at 8 p.m., which is brand new to us. So again, our normal show, if you happen to be watching this for the first time, our normal show is Sunday at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. So Noble AI is telling us that the audio is great, Paul, and I'm super thrilled to read that. Actually,
great, fantastic.
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah. So interestingly, you know, you mentioned like that's actually a point actually that maybe we should cover here, which is that our scheduling is different, right? Our scheduled lives are different at this point.
Yeah.
My normal Sunday evening group has been having a lot of trouble getting together. And that's not so much a technical hurdle as a logistical one of some of our members have children and they can't, you know, get online and dedicate their time to playing D&D when the kids are bouncing around the house and demanding attention. So that's an issue to get over. Sorry, I'm just going to fix this cable. It's driving me nuts.
So Paul, for the first time, is wearing headphones to make sure he's dialed into what our actual audio is. So hopefully that's helping us. So I'll chat a little bit right about my situation. So I do live here in New York. I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I am a professor of math and statistics and game theory at the City University of New York at CUNY. And so CUNY canceled classes in person about a week ago for the rest of the semester, and as of last Thursday, for the first time, switched to purely online instruction. And so where I am, I actually took the lead in our department, partly because of my knowledge actually of streaming here with Wandering DMs actually put me as in the position of the person who's actually most knowledgeable about both math and computer science and streaming and online stuff. So for the past week, I was actually pretty busy getting about 70 faculty members in our department up with online instruction for the first time, learning about the tools that are available for that. And at our school, there are, like I said yesterday, I mean, there are a total of 14,000 students, all of whom have to take a math class. So in the back of my head for about a week, I was thinking, I have to do this at least well enough to get some kind of math instruction for 14,000 students happening in about 72 hours. So that was a real fast, deep dive into the deep end of the pool real suddenly. And so classes happened for the first time Thursday. And as I was just telling Paul before we got on here, it kind of feels like I'm on the bridge of the Enterprise, because it feels like being on a spaceship. If I'm sending messages out into the universe and I'm receiving messages, and my students found it weird to begin with. But it actually worked better than expected. Our learning management system, which is called Blackboard, my prediction was that the whole system would just collapse under the load on Thursday, and that totally didn't happen at all.
That's great. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
At least the infrastructure is holding up.
Yeah, and they might have done some tweaks on the back end to, like, you know, reduce how much video is going around.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did so, that was really smart. And I was actually really impressed. I thought I was like at least a coin flip that the whole thing's going to be a huge disaster. And, you know, the internet's pretty robust these days, actually. It seems to be, of all things in the world that we need right now, it seems to be doing a pretty good job on a lot of levels. And thank goodness for that. So everybody who's keeping the pipes running, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you to all the essential services out there of one kind or another. Dan, how much has your researches for teaching class transcribed to, ooh, I could use this for D&D?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe not as much as I would have wanted. We're using a video conferencing technique system that's unique specifically to the internal of this Blackboard system called Blackboard Collaborate Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
And if that didn't work, certainly the next backups would have been things like publicly available things like WebEx or Zoom or maybe Skype that I'm on right this second.
Right.
But the internal system worked well enough, and it's got a virtual whiteboard, and it's sharing files and sharing PowerPoint slides if you want. So it is kind of tuned. You know, it's certainly the analog of a virtual D&D tabletop. It's got the tools that you want for that job. I have a drawing tablet now for the first time, so I can write math. So I'm thinking we might possibly use that at some point if you and I, Paul, design a dungeon live in a chat show.
Yep, we've talked about that.
Like one of our very good patrons suggested a while back.
Yeah.
And I think that the main flow of information has been from, you know, the Wandering DMs project into the teaching. So I was able to tell people what the problem areas are and what they need to look out for and how to make things efficient and, you know, things that would be nice but might be kind of risky.
Yeah.
I've been able to tell them about. And like number one, you know, right off the bat, it was a couple days ago, I said, number one, the main problem is going to be audio.
Audio. Yeah. I mean, there's an interesting, you know, we tend not to think about this, I think, very much. But one of the things I think you and I talked about before was how different audio versus visual data is, and how as humans we can separate visual data, right? Like we can put a separate box with me in one and you in the other and then have two signals, and that's fine. But our audio processing unit is one channel. So you got to figure out how to mix all the data in correctly and get the data you don't want. Don't want your own voice echoing back, because that's so distracting. And getting an echo of your own voice back that's like half a second behind just disables your ability to think.
Absolutely. And so so as you were tweaking settings before this show, that happened for about 10 seconds and you were very unhappy about it. And we did have a show a couple weeks ago where I was dealing with that on my end for about an hour and I had a headache at the end of it. So
definitely, I think if you're playing a D&D game with your friends and one of your players is saying like, oh, I'm getting this echo, my own voice is echoing back at me, definitely stop and address that, because that's going to make that person miserable.
You know, maybe this is obvious, but the thing that I've come up with in my teaching is if one student complains about audio, right, I can maybe briefly check in. And if it's one student, it's probably on their end, right? And again, I'm in a situation where I'll have between 10 and 20 students in my classes. One student's probably on their end, and I can recommend that they log off and reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody, right, if the majority of students are all saying there's a problem, clearly it's on my end, and I should restart my microphone or something like that on my end.
But, I mean, that said, I think what we've come to discover is that issues of echo are usually not on the speaker's end, right? If my voice is echoing, it's because your system is creating echo for me.
Yeah.
Right, it's usually probably your microphone is picking up my voice coming out of your speakers and regurgitating it back and making a feedback loop. And that's probably what's happening. Now, there's a lot of other things that can cause reverb and whatnot. Right. And the point of this show is not to get into the technical details of AV stuff, but it's clearly on our minds because we've just dealt with it. Right. So let's dive into more of the meat of what we're in here to talk about, which is, you know, you want to play your RPGs online. You want to keep your RPG campaign going. Right. Logistical problems, sure. You want to talk about, like, how do we just organize? Do we have a text chain? Do we have an email chain? One of the things that we've been experimenting with is moving some of those things to apps that can also potentially do some of the actual gaming mechanics. So that's stuff like Slack or Discord, where you can not only set up a persistent chat room, but also from there then launch video conferencing.
Gotcha. Right. Right.
So that's my go-to at this point, I would say, is probably Discord. Slack and Discord both have kind of similar features here. The downside with Slack is that it is, you know, it's a little more of an enterprise-y kind of situation. So it's the free level only gets you one-on-one. Free okay. video chat one-on-one. Okay. That's the same actually with Zoom. Zoom is also more of a professional, you know, grade kind of software. So again, you're gonna end up paying for the service if you want. Whereas Discord, that gives you free chat. Actually, they used to have a limit of up to 10 video audio chat participants, and in the current situation, they've upped that limit to 50.
I see.
So Discord's a pretty good choice right now.
Interesting. So obviously with you know, like the use of Slack is a major distinction between you and me, Paul. Right. Mm-hmm. So you use it heavily all day, every day for many, many things in all your recent workplaces. And Slack is really not used in academia, to my understanding. If I were to walk around and ask 50 random professors if they know what Slack is, I'd be surprised to find two that would say yes. Mm-hmm. So I've actually never used Slack.
And have you used Discord? Because that's a kind of a similar...
I've used Discord a little bit. I've used Discord maybe about 3 or 4 days, and I don't know, for what I was trying to use it for, wasn't actually super, super thrilled with it. But I know that more and more people are using it for D&D stuff just in the last year or two. So I should probably go back and check in again, actually.
They both offer a similar feature set in as much as there's not like one massive centralized server, right? Yep. You can set up your server that does have sort of asynchronous person-to-person. So it's similar to, say, Skype. I can have a list of friends and I can direct chat with those friends. That now I'm thinking specifically of Discord. Now I'm not sure if Slack actually does this feature. Okay. But so I can just have a list and just have ad hoc one-on-one conversations over chat with a random, you know, person in my contact list. Gotcha. But also you can set up servers that have channels, which are sort of the word they use now for chat rooms. So you have multiple channels. We're actually doing this. So we have, I typically run a 20 to 30 person gaming weekend in the first weekend of April. It's called HelgaCon. Yeah, you probably, anybody from our who's watched our channel before can go back a year and see us broadcasting live from the previous HelgaCon. Obviously that's not happening because of the current situation, and one of the things that everyone there wanted to get involved in was, what if we set up some kind of virtual online thing? And so I've set up a Discord server for that. And the notion is going to be that we have one kind of centralized channel where we all talk about what games we're going to play, and then individual games that need to organize will create their own little separate sub-channels. So you can get the subset of people for any given game into a channel.
Great. I will point out, as Paul modifies some stuff there, that HelgaCon, the name of the convention... Helga was a mangled a spoof version of the name of my character in a campaign that Paul was running at one point. So in some technical sense, I'm Helga.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. A point of pride for Dan, I'm sure. Convention is named after him.
Make this about myself for a minute.
That's probably an unusual situation, right? Probably most of our viewers are more just like an individual group who just wants to get there and play their games, in which case Slack versus Discord, I think you're probably going to go with Discord because free. All right. We should talk a little bit about Skype, which is what we're using right now.
Right. So before we move on, to the video chat specifically, other logistical stuff, right? Sure. I mean, you could just use email. And one thing that I've been doing, like with my fellow faculty members who have a very wide range of, you know, computer experience, right? We have people, certainly the computer faculty, who are like, just give me the tools and I'll find, and I love it. And a day later, I know everything.
Right.
And also some very senior math faculty who have kept email at arm's length for many decades. And so I have been in a situation where I have been advising people, you know, use the tool that you're comfortable with.
Right.
If all you're comfortable with using is email, go ahead and use that. Don't get lost in a piece of software that's so complicated that you're going to be unhappy about it. So people could totally, particularly if the group is small, scheduling by email is perfectly fine, and it's open source and everybody has access to it. And I'll say that the my biweekly gaming group here in Brooklyn that's been meeting for about 3 years does use Facebook, Facebook group for the logistical stuff, for planning the meeting every other week. And there have been days where I was like, this is actually pretty close to the only thing keeping me on Facebook at all is the group that was organized by somebody else. Well, actually, it's Max of 10 Dead Rats. I guess I'll just say that. Look for more of Max on 10 Dead Rats Thursdays on the Wandering DMs channel. And so I guess some of us sometimes wish that we could find a great thing that's not Facebook, but we have been using that for so long. That's our habit now.
I mean, you know, so scheduling is certainly an interesting issue. Any kind of shared calendar system is probably good, right? Whether that's Google Calendar or Facebook or stuff like that is probably helpful. You mentioned go with the tool you're used to and recommending email. And I think that's really interesting to point out that another factor you may want to consider is just what is the onboarding process for the rest of your group? Do you have a big group? Do you have a group who's maybe a little technology adverse, right? Do you have users who are extreme Luddites who only have aged equipment and refuse to use anything that's not open source?
Here we go again. I told you to stop calling me out, and it's happening all over again.
Sorry, can't help myself. Right. So, how easy is it for your whole group to get on? This is where I'm going to actually point towards Skype and Zoom, and I would lean towards Skype actually again for the sake of cost free. Right. So Zoom is definitely much more geared towards professional enterprise, businesses, whereas Skype is more of a single person, end user kind of experience. Both of them allow the option where you can set up a meeting in advance, schedule a call that's going to happen with a group of people, and it will give you a link. And then you can pass that link around and people can click it, and then they can, and that will walk them through either installing the application or just using a web interface on whatever browser they're using. And that's that ease of getting people on without having to install a lot of software or configure a lot of software, I think is actually really useful.
I agree with that. And also for Blackboard Collaborate, you can hand somebody just a raw web link to join in. Don't even have to be on the Blackboard system actually. And that's actually kind of a killer feature to be able to just hand somebody a web link. That's really killer. That's kind of new to Skype, am I right?
That is new to Skype, right? A lot of folks who remember Skype from like 10 years ago, before Slack sort of entered the scene, Skype was kind of standard enterprise-y stuff.
Yeah.
Probably think of Skype as kind of this aged system, but it's actually had a lot of features added on recently. I can tell you it's kind of hidden. If you go to skype.com/en/free-conference-call, that website will let you on the web without even launching your Skype client, without launching your Skype client, will let you generate a meeting and generate a link, and you can pass that around. I think you can also do it in the Skype client now. It's called, I think they call it Meet Now. So just look for that Meet Now button, and that likewise will then generate a link you can pass around.
Nice.
Zoom, that's always been from day one. That's been Zoom's bread and butter, I think, is that the organizer has the software, has the license, and then generates stuff and sends it out. Right. Zoom is really meant, I think, for that kind of teleconferencing. I'm a business and I need to meet with other businesses. So I need to make it super easy for them. I'm willing to take the difficulty, but I need to make it super easy for the other users.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So.
Yep.
Also,
Go on.
So, where are we now? We're in the video. We're in the video part, right?
We're in the video chat. Yeah, we're talking about video chat. Yep.
Also, Google Hangouts, right? Yep. So some people use Google Hangouts still,
which is being phased out, I believe, and is being replaced by Meet, Google Meet.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So, Google Hangouts does still technically work. You and I have played a game on Google Hangouts some 5 or 10 years ago.
I think it might have been more than that, actually.
Jeez.
Yeah.
yeah. It works for now, but I think Google is going to phase it out.
Okay. Okay. Let's talk. So I'm personally clear, right? Assuming you're going to use these services for free, the limits of the number of people who can connect on video. Mm-hmm. Are what? So Discord and...
I think Discord and Skype are both at 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that any of these are so limited. Every one of these will support the number of people you want, and it's just a question of whether you're going to pay for that or not. So Slack and Zoom and WebEx, you're going to have to pay.
Okay.
Slack and Zoom will both give you one-on-one calls for free.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, it's interesting. The number 50 is very interesting, Paul, because if I can remind you, when Gary Gygax wrote the original D&D Volume 1 in 1974, he specifically says that D&D campaigns can include up to 50 people. That's the exact number. That's the exact upper bound. So these services are apparently have been reading Gary's original publication and have designed their application specifically to support the standard original D&D campaign. So we gotta make that happen. We gotta get a 50-person D&D campaign on these systems.
You know, when we were researching this, I hunted around and landed accidentally on a random YouTube video of somebody who's trying to see how much they could push the envelope with Discord. Right. And they must have paid, because again, default Discord is 50. They got 200 people in an audio channel altogether. And in terms of like just presenting, when they first started it, it was just the host talking and all 200 people could hear him. And they were like, yep, this works. You could use this to present to 200 people. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Then he turned off the mute on everyone. And then all 200 people tried to talk at the same time. And it worked about as well as you would expect a group of 200 people all talking at the same time in a 10-foot by 10-foot room. Yep. It didn't crash. It made a lot of really horrible noises.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. He didn't dial it up. He didn't do like two and five.
No, right into the deep end. 200. Boom. Go. Actually, then he dialed it back. Then he was like, well, how many people can I get? And it's sensible.
Okay. All right. Yep. Got it. Right. That's the put it in the wall first methodology of scientific testing.
There you go. So
fascinating. Fascinating.
Hmm. Okay, so that gets you video chat, right? And that's probably, honestly, for a lot of games I run, that's sufficient, right? We can see each other, we can hear each other, and if you're not using miniatures and not using a board, that's fine. We got to get into dice rolling. How do I roll dice? At some level, if everybody trusts each other, then everybody's got their own dice, and you just roll dice and say, I got this number, move on. And that generally works. That's what we do on 10 Dead Rats, right? On a lot of live streams do that. The players just roll their dice and report the numbers and no one questions it.
Yep.
Now, I think you and I both agree there's a problem with that beyond just cheating. Assume that you trust your players and you're not worried about cheating.
Right.
The other problem is it actually hampers some of the excitement of the game. Right. There is those moments when an important roll comes up and somebody's got the die in their fist and everyone leans forward to see and the die comes out and there's that moment of tension as everyone
tumbles
watches
around. It tumbles around for a second.
Tumbles around. Everyone's excited and
maybe
then the number comes
edge.
Up.
It's on one edge and then it tips the other way, right?
I think that's an important part of gaming, right? And to take that away really, really sucks.
Yeah.
So how do you fix that? Here's a really cheap, hacky way. If you have access to a second computer, just make an extra account onto whatever video chat you're using. mute all of its audio so you don't get horrible feedback, and point the webcam at your table, right? Point it at, so that'll get you dice rolling, that'll get you miniatures, that'll get you everything. You got to be the person who jockeys all the stuff around and everybody tells you where to put stuff or even what dice to roll.
Yeah.
But it works, right?
Yeah. Totally.
So you could do that. Now there is, unfortunately, you're going to get the delay problem, which is if I'm the person with the extra video camera and it's pointed at my dice tray and I roll the D20 and it comes up natural 20 and I go, woohoo, 20, I get that woohoo moment about at least half a second before everyone else.
Right.
Right. Because just because the internet takes a little time to transmit the video, I go, woohoo. And everybody else goes, woohoo. So it's not perfect.
Yeah. Right. I will interject here that back the end of last year, you amusingly proposed an idea for a product that yesterday our good patron Ash reminded us, and he started referring to it as the Wandering DM's digital dice trademark product of dice that were actually themselves USB enabled, so you'd roll them and it would actually send.
Oh, the see digital. That? No, but that's not my idea actually. You're mixing two things up. My idea was originally a special dice tray that had a built-in camera, so that you could use standard video chat and you would get a little picture-in-picture display. So maybe my little corner right over here is my dice tray,
right?
And then when I roll my dice, you see them tumble into place. And I think that would be super cool, and I think a lot of streamers would love that. But it has the delay problem.
Another product. Maybe it's hidden from the actual person who rolled it. So maybe if you have a cover or something like that. I mean, I suppose you could do like a dice towery type thing, whereby it's actually enclosed, and the person rolling it themselves doesn't see it until it's on the stream.
Yep. Could do that. Yeah, it's not bad. Okay. The other idea.
So someone should do that anyway. So we are still recommending that someone should do that, and we are happy to give licensing rights to the Wandering DM's name, and to promote your product,
Digital Dice Tray. There's another product that actually totally exists, which is Bluetooth enabled dice. They are specific dice with Bluetooth transmitters in every single die.
Wow.
And so when you roll them, it sends a signal to your computer, so your computer can digitize the result and work with other software to either display or sum or whatever those dice. So we could actually have, I could have physical dice, I roll it, it transmits, I roll to 16 to the software displays a little animated die or something.
Wow. Are they normal size? They're normal size.
Yeah.
So I will say, one thing that you and I've talked about before is having actual dice on camera, which again, we feel is really... fundamental to the D&D experience. There's a little bit of a problem of readability. Do you use normal size dice, or do possibly use giant mega size dice for the readability issue? And we saw the people with that was Acquisitions Unlimited, right?
Acquisitions Incorporated.
Who were using giant dice for camera readability in normal sized dice trays, and it looked a little bit awkward of the die itself was half the size of the tray and it didn't roll around terribly much.
Rolling one of those big D20s is always weird, right? Because you're kind of barely getting a shake, you know, as you it kind of just fits in your two hands or something. Yeah.
Ideally, you kind of need a casino table, right? You kind of need a blackjack table or something that. I mean, a craps table is what I'm trying to say. But obviously, nobody's going to have that. That's ridiculous.
Okay, so now I think we ought to segue into virtual tabletops. Right?
Yeah, so let's talk about mechanisms whereby that clearly wipe out that lag issue for things like die rolling and stuff like that.
Once you start talking about a virtual tabletop, that not only gets you virtualized dice that everyone sees that are generating numbers at the same time, but now you also open the door to things like a shared battle mat where people can all move virtual pieces around. You can attach stats. We can start going into even rules automation, which is a whole other layer that some virtual tabletops offer. Yeah. The big one that I hear most often is Roll 20.
Yeah.
Now, just to be clear, I've yet to have a chance to play a full game on any of these. I've tinkered with some of them on the website and sort of poked at them to figure out what they can do, but I haven't actually played a game.
Okay.
Which I hope to rectify soon.
Noted.
Roll 20 has a couple of great features in it. One, it's in the browser. So again, no special software to install. I just log into Roll20.net, and I'm off to the races. Also, has that kind of freemium model where the base thing is free and you're going to pay for add-ons, but maybe don't buy any add-ons. You can still kind of use it, and it's fine.
Right.
It does have built-in video chat. I don't know how good that built-in video chat is. Anecdotally, I hear a lot of people saying, well, I use Roll20 with Discord, which implies to me that the video chat's maybe not great.
Yes. Yeah. A couple of people shared with that yesterday as they tried the Roll20 video chat and were just thought it was they had both audio and video issues with it, I think is what they said.
Yeah. The other thing about Roll20 is it's got its own community, right? It's got its whole own website where you're going to have an account, and it's got forums where people coordinate gaming. So maybe if you don't have anyone to play with, pop on a Roll20, make an account, and start trolling the forums and see if you can get into a group.
Yeah. Good idea.
So that's Roll20. I played a little bit with Roll20 because I was looking for something to potentially run a Fiasco game for. And now Fiasco has some odd specific needs where I need, if you've never played Fiasco before, we all sit around a table, and usually the table has a big piece of paper on it, just big blank piece of paper, and we have a fistful of D6s. We roll the D6s as a big pool, and then those become tokens, and what numbers they have is important, so we want them to stay on the table, and we want to pass them around and use them as tokens in the game.
Gotcha.
And then we also want to write notes on the table, specifically notes in a space on the table that's between players. So in the space between me and Dan, I'm writing Dan and I are playing a father and son, so I write father and son between me and Dan, or me and the person on my left are lovers, so I write lovers there, right? Something like that. So you end up with these kind of hodgepodge of notes on the physical table, and their space is actually significant.
Gotcha.
A shared kind of whiteboardy space with the ability to write, that's Roll20. That's like the default. That's just what you get.
Okay.
I also found it really simple to make virtual dice where it could generate a bunch of dice that would then stick on the board and stay.
Okay. Those are actually randomized to begin with, so you can do the I'm rolling now, and then they appear.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, great.
Yep. Very great. And then you can also group select them and re-roll them if you wanted to. So not that's important actually too in Fiasco, where the dice get partitioned out, everybody's got some number of the dice, and then they have to all re-roll them.
Gotcha.
So you just want to re-roll your little subset. They weren't 3D, they didn't bounce around, they were just flat, and I hit the button and they regenerated the number. I think that's the D20 Pro default, is it's generally text-based, maybe you're going to get images. It does look like there's a checkbox in there that says 3D dice. I haven't gotten to play with it yet.
Okay.
I hope it works.
Because I feel like what I'd heard before is that the basic roll 20 was just text-based. Type in chat, see the result of chat was what I thought.
That's what you're going to get by default when you first log in and create your account and do nothing else. Now, Roll20 is certainly very plug-in heavy, and they have their whole own little secondary market. So if you're a creator and you're making content for a role-playing game or add-ons or whatever, I encountered this when I was making Insanity Cards, is I actually had some people ask me, are you going to make Roll20.net versions?
Right.
I could do that. I could make digital versions that go on Roll20, and I could charge the users for them.
Gotcha.
So you can do that in Roll20.
The point that I will say that from what I see, the original D&D, the OD&D 74 guys that are on the OD&D 74 web forum are, I think most of them are trying to go in this direction. And again, along with me, I've wanted for many, many years, I've liked the face-to-face experience is the critical thing. Yep. And I've kind of kept the online thing a little bit at arm's length a little bit, but now I thank God that's there. Like all of a sudden now in the current situation, thank God that line is there for gaming purposes. So I think that a lot of the OD&D 74 guys, they're going in this direction that you're talking about right now, Paul, of using Discord, with Roll20. And, partly I think that the experiences they're having is they're a little, disappointed that, I'm not terribly surprised about this, that the resources that you're talking about, character sheets and, formula cards and things like that are pretty small in scope currently for classic games like original D&D or Traveler or maybe RuneQuest or something like that. And so There's kind of a call out at the moment for can people make a, you know, original D&D things, or maybe use, you know, maybe use Moldvay BX as a basis or something like that.
I think that's really kind of Roll20's niche, right? Is that it's a toolkit by which you can make you can virtualize your games, but it's probably not going to do it for you.
Gotcha.
And so a lot of people have done it for the bigger name, more popular games, right? I'm sure there's plenty of 5th edition D&D stuff on Roll20.
Exactly.
And yeah, probably no OD&D stuff for Roll20, unfortunately. Yeah. But it does give you the tools by which you could do it. So if you could get in there, go make the stuff that you need, and if it's reasonably complex or reusable and you think others could use it, you could maybe even sell it, I guess. Maybe.
Okay. And this might be the opportunity for that. So if you get into one of these sites that do have that capacity and you make something that's really perfect for that particular niche today, you know, it might take off tomorrow, and that might become the standard that people are using going forward in that particular thing. So there might be a bit of an opportunity here at the moment for that.
Yep, could be. There's other virtual tabletops that go even further in this direction where their whole gist is to sell you specific rule sets for specific games, and they're going to go really deep in the automation because they're going to take care of a lot of stuff for you. In this case, I'm thinking of things like Fantasy Grounds and D20 Pro.
Okay. Now,
Fantasy Grounds, I want to cover that first because it's in a little bit of an odd state right now. When I went onto Fantasy Grounds' website, there's two versions. There's Classic and there's Unity. And their Fantasy Grounds Unity is in like beta or something, or trial version, something. It's clearly still in the works. Whereas Fantasy Grounds Classic, still available, but they're clearly not upgrading it for the latest stuff. So, for example, they have both Windows and Mac versions, but the Mac version is only 32-bit. So if you've upgraded to the latest version of OS X, you won't be able to run it, because the latest version of OS X is 64-bit only.
Right.
But they've clearly moved on from that, and they're not putting any effort to support that because they're rebuilding the whole system as Unity.
Right.
And so that's the thing you're going to have to navigate when you go into Fantasy Grounds is, you know, immediately right off the bat, which one do you want, Classic or Unity? You know, do you want Bleeding Edge or do you want...
I guess I'll just say, so I actually didn't mention this yesterday, but so obviously you and I, Paul, know what Unity is. Mm. You know, maybe everybody watching is sufficiently hardcore gamers that they know. So Unity is a platform for high-end video games.
Yeah. It makes sense because the whole point of Unity is to allow you to develop your game for a variety of platforms, right? Windows, Mac, mobile, web, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That said, Fantasy Grounds currently only supporting Windows and Mac, as far as I could tell. Like, I couldn't even find Linux clients. So, they do have different pricing options, monthly subscription or a one-time license fee. But I don't know. For me, if I'm making everybody download a client, I want it to work on as many platforms as possible, and I want that to be easy.
Yeah.
So then we should talk about D20 Pro.
Great.
Windows, Mac, Linux, all supported. It's got a 30-day trial, so you can go and muck with it for a while.
Great.
And they go really deep into rules automation and some really like fancy stuff. The big ticket item you're going to find there, you're not going to see other places, is their vision and lighting system, which is really very clever.
Yeah.
Moment to say that I'm a little biased. One of our friends who goes to HelgaCon is a dev at D20 Pro, so we may be a little biased here.
It's beautiful looking. It has been for years, right? We've been seeing it in, you know, beta test versions for years, and man, it is just a beautiful piece.
It's very feature rich. Now, the version we always used to see and we used to play with at a couple of those cons was specifically built to go onto a single large, you know, table sized device, right? A giant screen where it's all been virtualized, but we're still gathered around it collectively.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they also make stuff for internet, so for sure it works on the internet. So then you get this. Let me go into a little detail on what the vision and lighting stuff is. So basically, you're looking at what looks like a board with minis on it, right? And you're moving minis around, and as I move my figure around, it's actually using lighting system to draw cones of vision and using, you know, darkening areas where this character can't see, hiding elements from them that they shouldn't be able to see. And then doing rules automation, I keep saying that term, what does that mean? That means I can like click and say, I want to cast my fireball at 5th level at this spot on the board, and it does all the math and applies the damage and rolls the dice and does everything. It's almost like playing, you know, video game version of D&D.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. And it's very robust, and we've seen that in progress for years, and you know, probably more people should know about it.
Yeah, definitely recommend you check that out, especially if you're playing Pathfinder, 5th edition D&D, right? These are the systems that they've gone deep in.
Yeah.
Right? If you're playing Fiasco, I don't know, honestly. I have no idea, but maybe Roll20 is easier if you're playing something a little more unlikely to be officially supported by one of the bigger tabletops.
Yeah, that makes sense. What else? What about Vorpal Board, Paul?
Yeah. Let's talk about Vorpal Board. What do you know about Vorpal Board, Dan?
Well, our friend Nate, who works at Dwarven Forge, when we met with him at PAX East, was telling us about that. First time I'd heard about it.
Me too.
So obviously, I live in New York City, and I guess those are guys currently developing, I guess, in the Albany area, I guess.
Cool.
And so making a new custom made virtual tabletop for exactly these games that we like to run.
Yeah. It looks pretty sweet to me. So the major downside to Vorpal Board, it's not out yet, right?
Yeah.
That's they just finished their Kickstarter. I think that I've seen rumor that it's going to be out in September, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's just a crying shame that it's not out right now. They do have a YouTube channel, so if you go search YouTube for Vorpal Board, you can find they've done a bunch of sessions of various games, and you can see what it looks like. I feel like I've done a lot of talking, Dan. Why don't you tell us what's the killer part of Vorpal Board?
Well, the example that I saw, so you've got, you know, four examples are four or five people that are all playing remotely, and they have an actual miniature set up. And they have a camera on the miniature setup, and they can also software zoom in on places. Players can take control of a pointer to, like, point specific spaces that they want their miniatures to move to or something like that. And then, again, we're super sensitive to the whole dice rolling issue, and then their dice roller that's built into the system is someone, you know, calls for a dice roll, and a big 3D die just rolls in, taking priority over everything else, and would roll over my face and over the top of the barrier here and over Paul's face and appear simultaneously to everybody watching. And you can either groan in despair at the low number that's come up, or everybody cheer at the 20 that's come up. And I thought that worked really well. I felt like it gave, you know, just as like a piece of cinematography, frankly, it gave the priority and the screen space that moment deserves. And I thought that was like almost like as soon as it happened, it was obvious, right? It was like it was like a math theorem that you've been slaving over for months. And then once it finally comes together, it was like, well, of course that's what had to happen. Yeah. How could anyone ever thought anything different?
It's so funny because at first it feels like a cop out, right? Because you're like, well, you didn't even make an area for the dice. They just go on top of everything. But of course they should go on top of everything. It's the most important thing happening in the game right now.
Yeah.
Let's all see the dice.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it totally kind of like breaks the frame, right?
Yeah,
in kind of like a comic book way of like breaking the frame for emphasis, and it's like it really that's great. That actually works really well.
I think it's perfect. Like, I could imagine someone like inventing a really fancy system to try and, you know, map out the 3D space of the actual physical board and try and make it look like the die is in the space of with the miniatures, and that probably wouldn't be as good. Like just bounce it across the screen, make it big and juicy, and let everyone see it, and that's fantastic.
You and I have had this experience in video game development, right? Yeah. Of having the complicated thing, and then maybe a competitor actually coming up with like the really incredibly stupid solution, and be like, oh yeah, right, would really have saved an enormous amount of heartache if we'd done that. But in this case, on Vorpal Board, it looks really good.
So Vorpal Board, my impression from looking at their Kickstarter is that they were really targeting board games first.
Right.
That
right.
D&D is kind of an afterthought, but why not D&D? Right. So the idea of Vorpal Board is meant to be that it's a virtual tabletop where you can use the physical game itself, right? You don't have to digitize everything because you're just going to point a camera at the physical pieces. Somebody's going to move them around. It has a whole this odd little box, I guess, that you stick your phone in so that you can like scan cards. If everybody needs to see this card, just stick the card in and it scans it and puts it up on the board.
So I think they have examples in their trailers of things like Carcassonne or the other one, the other German game.
The other German game, because there's two. There's only two.
Or Dewey, if you prefer. Settlers of Catan, was originally Settlers, and then in the middle part Settlers of Catan, and now is just Catan, so whatever you want to call it.
Some combination of Settlers.
So cards and pieces and things like that. And I was laughing 30 seconds ago, because if you look at their Kickstarter video, it's really quite amusing, because they totally, and Paul pointed this out first, is they totally originally made it for board game, card game type stuff. And then somebody went, wait, we should have mentioned role-playing games, and they snipped in. So, and then what happens is the thing pauses, and an animated dragon head pops into the frame and goes, and D&D, right? And then they go on with the rest of the video. Right?
Literally. And it happens like two or three times in the video.
Yeah. And D&D!
Really, guys? You didn't think of D&D? Come on.
Yeah, it was like, wow, But on the one hand, you know, obviously you're not going to name your product Vorpal Board if you didn't know about D&D in the first place, right? Right? And their, you know, their examples online is they themselves are using it to run D&D. Yep. So I don't know where the marketing got disconnected from the actual product or something like that, but it is a riot of the really nicely made trailer, and then like, man, D&D, they come in kind of poorly, frankly.
To be clear with
the dice thing, so you're telling me that Vorpal is, within my naivete, Vorpal Board is the only one of the virtual tabletops that has these 3D dice rolling.
I'm willing to bet that you can get it in Roll 20. I can't say for certain because I haven't done it, but I'm willing to bet it's there. Okay. And I think that the other stuff, like I bet D20 Pro and Fantasy Grounds do it as well. I don't know if they contain it to a window or whatnot, but I feel like, you know, one of Fantasy Grounds definitely tries to keep the visuals really top notch. So I'm willing to bet that they have 3D dice bouncing around.
Okay. I feel like they ought to at this point.
Yeah. I don't see why they wouldn't. And especially because usually in those games, or in those tabletops, typically when you're, say, logging in or making a new game in Fantasy Grounds or D20 Pro, the first thing it asks is, what system are you using?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, so you got to tell it, okay, I'm using Pathfinder, let's go.
Gotcha.
And then at that point, right, it's doing all this rules automation, it knows exactly what kind of dice you're going to need and for what purposes, right? Mm-hmm. So I would assume that it's pretty well and tightly integrated.
I will say that some of the original D&D players have gotten frustrated with exactly that, with a heavy-handed system that expects that level of formality, that you need to define the system and we'll run all the formulas for you and things like that. Some of the men and women are finding that a little bit frustrating, that they expect the DM to have full authority at all time over what's happening and to run it a little bit more loosely and to make determinations on the fly. And they've actually been, you know, kind of wrestling with those, we expect to run a bunch of formulas for you, when they're like, my own game is customized and it's not like anybody else's. And it might be different from day to day and my rules might change from week to week.
It's so funny, right? Because, like, on one hand, you have, like, a loose system, highly customizable, but a lot of question marks, and so you're going to have to figure it out because the base system seems to provide nothing, and you're just left to try and puzzle out what you need to do. On the other hand, you have something that's very thorough and very hand-holdy and very empowering of a single individual. And am I talking about different versions of D&D or virtual tabletops here?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
funny.
Let me talk about a couple things that basically just do dice rolling. So maybe you get away from the formal infrastructure and you're using a, you know, just plain video chat that doesn't know about gaming, mm-hmm. and you just add something that does dice rolling. And I can think of, you know, two things off the top of my head. as you reminded me about the other day, Paul, is Google, just the Google search engine will roll dice for you. So if you just bring up google.com and you type in roll d20 or roll 66, it does that, and it does actually have a little 3D animation, at least on the desktop version, and in come the dice, and it added up for you, and it looks really nice.
It's a very slick interface, and it seems to have arrived with no fanfare whatsoever. And I'm surprised more people aren't talking about it. But yeah, actually pretty good dice roller, just inherently built into the Google search bar. Just type your dice formula in there, and it will roll it, and then give you a lot of good tools for modifying or re-rolling or changing which dice, and et cetera.
Now, admittedly, some people are ideologically biased against Google, and they totally have, reasonable justifications for that. I know when it came up in a discussion on Twitter a couple of days ago, someone said, advised me about a good digital dice roller for an online game, and I mentioned Google, and they took great offense of that, honestly. And they're like, how dare you recommend a Google product for me? I'm like, okay, that's fine. I respect that. I was slightly surprised at the intensity, but as they say, Twitter's wild. So there's that. Second, a product that I found out about, I think Sunday morning, is a product called Unseen Servant. Mm-hmm. And that is a free website. You do make an account there, and it's just for basically dice rolling. You can log on and create a character with just some ability scores. And the main thing is basically, I believe, to like register macros for common types of dice you're going to have to roll. Mm-hmm. So just for yourself, you can say, here's the dice I roll for my character's sword damage, and here's the dice I roll for my character's fireball spell. And then you can just click that die while the game is in play. Everybody else in your game is connected to it. They're going to see that simultaneously as a, dice integrity issue, which I like. So you can make a sketchy character. The DM can make a campaign with standard dice that they need to roll in the campaign. And so I think I've seen a couple of the OD&D people saying, I'm just running with Discord and Unseen Servant, and that's all I need to run my game.
Okay, it's fair. Yeah. And Unseen Servant, then, we all be logged into Unseen Servant at the same time and all watching each other do our stuff?
I think so. Okay. I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Right. So then you just got to deal with like, where's your video chat window and where's your Unseen Servant window and how do you dock them? Whatever. That's fine. You can figure that stuff out.
Right. Right. I mean, right at this moment, I'm watching two things. I'm watching our show and I'm watching our chat over in the other thing.
Yep.
If anything shows up in there.
Yeah.
So it's doable.
Yep. Yep. There's, so another thing you could do, right, is, we talked a little bit about trying to, wrangle live streaming software like we use for this show into using that for D&D, right? So we are currently using a piece of software called vMix to make this show. There's an open source version or variant or no, there's an open source competitor.
Analog.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Called OBS. So you can go download that for free. And basically
Open Broadcaster Studio, let's be clear.
And you can I think I've always just Googled OBS, and it just is the first thing that pops up.
Yeah, sure.
So you bring that in, and that will let you do things like compose screens, like what you're seeing right here, where you can say, I want this video source from this webcam and this video source from some, from a call, and I want to compose them together into a thing. This is one of the things that I actually, here's a case where Skype actually has a feature over all the others, which is Skype supports NDI. Which is an interface for sending video signals across. So it's very easy in OBS to say, put this Skype feed over here. So my actual Skype client is minimized to my taskbar right now. I don't have any reason to look at it because I'm looking at the Skype source getting pumped into vMix to show Dan's image here in front of me.
Right.
And then likewise, you can do the inverse and you can say, okay, now I've composed this nice image, pipe that back to Skype and use that instead of my webcam. As my output. So Dan, as he watches in his Skype call, is seeing the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is really nice.
So if you wanted to do that, you want to set up, like, if you want to get really fancy with your fiasco game and put, everybody's faces in a circle and then have, like, in the center maybe a screen capture of another app you're running that is a whiteboard that you're drawing on, that would probably work. You could do that.
Nice.
I don't know if it's the best, honestly. I think at that point, maybe just use one of the virtual tabletops. But
okay, that makes sense.
I don't know. It's an interesting experiment. You could try it. You know, so like if you compare like some folks ask, well, you run 10 dead rats. What do you run for that? Right. So I'm using broadcasting software because broadcasting is what we're trying to do. I have everybody's video pumped in. And then I have a version where all of our faces are on one side and the whole right side is devoted to a map, which is just a screen grab of an image software I have running on another screen. So I can scroll the map around kind of Google Maps like, and we can look at the map together as a group. And still see each other's faces and still talk. And so all my other players can then have that window maximized on their screen and see the whole thing.
Nice, nice. And the NDI thing is important to directly software patch it in, because up until we were using that, you had to carefully position the Skype reception window, and then you had to draw a box about what is being grabbed from the screen into the show.
Right. You had to devote some portion of your monitor or have a second monitor that has the call running on it so that you could then grab that output and put it into the broadcast. Whereas Skype's NDI actually lets you do it entirely virtually, so I don't have to worry about that.
Right. It's obviously the elegant solution to that.
Yeah. 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 So that's between that and like the ability to the ease of onboarding, right? When we have guests and I don't want to have to tell them, here's how to install this software. Yeah. That's why Skype is our go-to these days for video chat. You know, I'm sure Discord is just as good. We actually had some audio issues when we tried to use Discord for the show.
We did.
So we prefer Skype.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because, again, like for some people, Skype's the oldie that they've gotten away from. But Skype's gotten, you know, added features recently that seems to have, you know, kind of for us put it again to the head of the pack. So it seems like it's a really legitimate competitor. And it's interesting, again, that is a good thing. A number of different services are trying to compete in this zone, and they seem to all be getting better rapidly because of that.
Yep. Yep. Now, what you won't get in Skype that you get in, say, Discord is that ability to host your own server and have multiple channels and kind of do that meta organization asynchronous stuff. I mean, you can certainly, there's chat, right? Skype has chat. You and I sometimes chat to each other over it just before a show.
Yeah.
But yeah, Discord's definitely clearly has a lot more features in that area.
Right. Right. Fascinating. Yep. Yeah. So pretty happy with the show that's happening right now.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Yeah. It's funny. On Sunday, we were, of course, cursing Skype because we were assuming they were involved in the problem. Turns out not at all. Probably our settings on the broadcasting software end. So whoops.
And we'll say, I mean, we had an initial problem, and then you were trying to solve it on the fly, and then, you know, trying to at that point, it's difficult to get things perfectly.
My God, you're reminding me of, like, my top piece of advice for anyone trying to run a game online. Here it comes in, like, the last possible minute of the show. Devote specific time to testing your technology.
Right.
Right? Do not assume you're just going to pop online, make stuff work, and play a game. It's not going to happen. Tech is hard. Something's going to break. Someone's going to have a problem. Devote an actual session, your session negative one or whatever, to just figuring out the software and making sure everybody's working. Maybe you'll be super lucky and everything will go swimmingly, and then you'll actually be able to play a little bit at the end of that. Probably not.
We have not been super lucky with audio issues flying by the seat of the pants.
Yeah.
We have had to take some time offline to schedule and test and confirm and study and research. Yeah. And specifically with the audio issues, we have been rolling with disadvantage for a number of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So devote some time to it. That's my advice. You know, don't underestimate that you're going to need some time, especially if your group's big, right? Somebody's going to have some specific, oh, I've got an old version of Mac, or I've got a, you know, whatever. I only have a web browser that no one's ever heard of before. You know, schedule time for that.
I'll just throw a thought, and I know nobody does that, but honestly, this is what's happening for my classes at the moment. So I'm, you know, running a session. I have a fairly large number of students, and what I have done, you know, partly to make sure that bandwidth issues don't pop up, and to make sure that stuff is smooth. I just shut everybody else's camera and audio off. Nobody can speak. Yeah. Nobody is visible. All you can do is text chat. So you might consider, if you are running a 50-person original D&D game on one of these services, that you just only the DM is visible. The DM takes full auteur directorial control of the whole system. Other people can text chat, and only the DM is actually visible. There's an option that you don't see very much, but you might possibly consider that if you have a really, really large group. Maybe that'll make things run a little bit more smoothly.
Certainly. You know, as much as we love video chat and to see each other's faces, if your internet is choking and you're getting, you know, 2 frames a second or people are cutting out, consider turning off the video. That will save you a ton of bandwidth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, we're about out of time here, Dan. Any final thoughts about playing D&D on the internet?
Well, it's more important now than ever before, obviously. And so I think as occurred to me later yesterday, I think that gaming historians will look back at the moment that we're in right now and say this was probably an enormous, I don't know how this is all going to play out in, you know, weeks or months or years from now, but probably many, many of us are taking a deep dive for our own sanity right now into online gaming. And, you know, thank goodness that's available to us. And probably gaming historians will look back at this time and say there were really big changes in the gaming hobby as a result of everybody exploring and finding out about online games when they were not doing that on such a intense, immediate basis right, you know, a month before now.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I will add in my comment that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I think that the longer this drags on, the more interesting things we're going to see come to light. People are going to come up with new solutions. Someone's going to invent the digital dice tray or, you know, other amazing, right? I want that application, whatever it is, that lets me hold physical dice because I like the feel of it, roll them. And simultaneously, everybody sees the result, and I don't know how that happens, but that's
right.
What I want.
I apologize because now I'm delaying the show by a minute or two. Okay, but here's the thing I discovered today, like on this particular theme.
Yeah.
My first job in video games was a company called Papyrus Racing in Boston, Massachusetts, and we did NASCAR racing, and we did IndyCar racing, we got Grand Prix Legends. You, Paul, have connected with a couple people from that company in other businesses, in other companies you've been at later on. My, you know, partner, disinvited Brooklyn artist Isabel Garbani, right? We met working on a project many years ago called NASCAR Racing Online Series, where the hope was to have an actual official NASCAR series. There's a whole bunch of series in NASCAR. The main win, you know, the main tournament, the Busch League, the trucks and all kinds of other stuff. And so our intention was to make an actual official NASCAR league online. Well, as of today, my former colleagues that have still been working in that zone ever since at a company called iRacing now announced that with the motorsports series being canceled for the year, that they actually do, in fact, have that NASCAR actually has tapped them for an official series with actual NASCAR drivers participating in lieu of the actual physical motorsports. And so you think you think of a number of possible advantages of that. Obviously at the moment, reduced crowd sizes, fuel efficiency, it's actually better for the environment. And again, these top professionals that wouldn't have done that a couple of weeks ago, you can still log on. You can find my former colleagues at iRacing and look for the official NASCAR racing league that is going to be happening this summer for the first time. And necessity being the mother of invention, life is totally upside down and different very quickly. In some ways, very badly. In some ways, amazing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah. I'll be very curious to see how that goes, and what other things get virtualized in a similar fashion. So,
totally.
Amazing. Great. Great. Well, there you go.
I did not know about that yesterday, right? So on version one of this program, I didn't know about that 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
So that's only something I can bring in the conversation today. So I'm super glad, Paul, that we did this retake of this show, because I think it's such an important topic at this time.
Yeah.
And if that helps anybody at all get involved, I hope they will pursue that. And, you know, in the comments, please tell us things you've discovered or things that we left out of this for other people's benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Best of luck to the iRacing team on that. I look very eagerly to hear more about what happens there. And as Dan mentions, anybody watching this video after the fact, please leave us comments if you have thoughts of, know of other software we missed and want to share it with folks, or other processes that might work, or have questions about how does X, Y, or Z work. I'm certainly going to keep digging into this stuff, and I hope to learn a lot more, and I hope to get more opportunities to play stuff online, because that's the only place where I can. So drop us some comments and ask questions or give feedback, and we'd love to hear from you.
Totally agree with that. Remember that we, Paul and myself, the Wandering DMs, you can like and you can comment and you can subscribe to us on the services of YouTube and Twitter and Twitch. And on all of those sites, we go by Wandering DMs. So please look for us there.
Also, our show is available in audio-only podcast format. If you prefer to consume the show in that way, you can do so on our website at wanderingdms.com. Or you can use your favorite podcast provider, whether that's iTunes or Google Podcast or Spotify or any of those places. We're out there. If you are listening to this show on one of those providers, please take a moment to rate and review us. We really appreciate that, and it helps other folks find our show.
We do. And in addition to that, we also have a good number of patrons to our show that support what we do here and make it possible in ways that we couldn't on just our own. So thank you so much for our patrons who do support us in that way. If you would like to join our patrons in supporting the show, please look on patreon.com/wanderingdms. That's where we are. Have a number of different level tiers where we thank you at the end of the show. And we have additional advantages and private videos and things like that that you can get access to. And then don't forget that our standard chat show is Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we hope that you'll join us next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.